Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
After the end of World War II, the question is raised about power, nationalism, obedience, identity, and of course, the evil remains of a painfully relevant period. Our guest has spent years studying the history of violence and ideology in Central Europe, with a particular focus on Germany, on Poland, and the role of the Wehrmacht during the Second World War. She's also been involved with a new documentary, the series World War II, alongside Tom Hanks, helping to unpack the historical realities behind the conflict, the Holocaust, and the machineries of war. Today on Chai FM, we explore not only the history, but why it still matters so deeply. Joining us today is somebody very, very involved in the series, Jadwiga Biskupska, and I probably butchered that, and I'm really, really sorry if I did. A very good day to you. Thank you for joining us. I hope you're well.
I am well. Thanks for having me.
A great, great pleasure. So you were involved. How did this process work? Were you involved? I know that you were involved in specific episodes, but how did it come about in terms of involvement?
Yeah, I wasn't the first historian that they contacted, though my expertise lies early in the war because I studied the first place that Nazi Germany invades. A senior colleague of mine, Robert Cetino, who's long been a historian of the Wehrmacht, of Germany at war, he has been one of the central people in writing out the script and in determining how the history of the war will hold. And they also brought in a number of people with specific expertise, and I was in that queue of people to talk about Poland, to talk about atrocities against civilians in Eastern Europe, the Holocaust, Polish resistance, and other topics that related to things that I've researched and taught about. So I joined this larger group of people who had things to say about different aspects of the story, and we're able to help them fine-tune the entire scope of the project, because the scope of the project is huge. And though there are it's really quite impressive how much they were able to get in this series. And yet, even the really senior historians of the war have specific geographical and methodological expertise, and not everything. They don't do the entire war.
Right. What drew you to this field of history?
It seems like a long time ago now. I'm the child of historians. I've always been interested in historical thinking and working with historical documents. And when I was a college student, I was studying German Empire. And increasingly, I became interested in thinking about where Germany had expanded and how. And the obvious place for me to do that was in Eastern Europe. Mm. And I'm someone who's interested in both ideas, what we sometimes call intellectual history, and in war and violence, because those appear to be very different. And intellectual history and what happens on the ground during a war seem to be totally different topics. But in fact, what's happening on the ground during a war is the result of a long chain of ideas. And I was very interested as a college student and then as a graduate student in putting those things together and thinking about how armies learn, how populations develop during wartime through, in fact, all of the horrible things that happened to them. And I wrote a doctoral dissertation on the first years of Nazi occupation in Poland and what Nazi Germany was attempting to do in Poland. And that evolved into a longer book about the entirety of Nazi occupation, how the Holocaust unfolded in Poland, how the Polish elite responded, how Polish resistance developed, and when and how it was effective. So,
right.
And when I teach undergraduates here.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was so interesting because when I saw the first episode, the amount that you did manage to cover within that very, very short, I mean, it's 45 minutes. It was actually incredible how you managed to cover so many aspects and so many things that I didn't know. And I thought that was quite interesting because there seems to be a, it's almost as though we know certain things, and even people who have studied this and learned a lot about that period, we've learned certain things, but we didn't know everything. And in fact, there's misconceptions that I was shocked by. Poland, for example, the extent of the Polish army and the resistance that they put up in the first few weeks of the war was completely unknown to me. I found that incredibly interesting.
So there's a lot of the thing about the war is everyone has a story of the war. Mm. Everyone who participated in every society. So there's a South African story of the war. There's an American story of the war, or several, and British ones and Polish ones. And if you grow up with these, if they're part of your educational experience or your family's experience, you think that story is correct and you have points of contact with it. The problem, of course, is that this is a massive global war. It's at least one war, if not two or three, that's been out of control. And different peoples and different communities have a different connection to it. So they tell incompatible stories. And then the job of historians is to put these together and weigh them. We haven't always done that well, because we're often doing it in specific languages. Right? So there's a very particularly Polish story of the war that begins in 1939 and ends at the end of 1944 or 1945, and in some ways continues into the era of communism. And that's a very different story than Americans tell, where Americans generally have a story that has a kind of a vague prologue that begins in 1941 with Pearl Harbor. And those stories don't fit together, and that's the point, because people experience the war differently. And I think one of the opportunities of this documentary is to present to a global audience that your war, that your people's understanding of the war is only a piece of it. And that another group of people that are also studying the same conflict and thinking about its legacy, that they don't agree always on basic details. When the war began, right? Who were the enemy? What were the coalitions or alliances? What ideology primarily animated it? And this isn't because sometimes, as we say now, people have different facts. It's they had genuinely different experiences. And these experiences have very different legacies.
I think what you're saying is so right. And now if I translate that back to my story, which is to my grandparents who fled Germany as Holocaust, as just pre the war, as Jews leaving Germany, the story of Poland was only relevant to the fact that it started the war. It wasn't relevant anymore to their family or our family history. So that is so interesting. And as you say, Pearl Harbor would have been another completely different narrative. I remember reading somewhere that soon after the war, after any war, the only way to deal with it is very personal stories. And as time moves, we have the ability to zoom further and further out. Getting a sense of this documentary, I do feel that in a way, maybe now we are able to look at all of these different pieces and see how it all came together. What's your thought on that? Would you agree with that as a premise? It was just something I remember reading a couple of years ago and thinking, you know, that's interesting. I wonder how true or not it is.
I think there are definite trade-offs with studying a conflict through time. And the trade-offs are these, is that if you don't have skin in the game, if this is not a war you fought or your family fought or lost and gained from, you're willing to think about the proper way to put it in context, or the best way or the most convenient way to put it in context. And I do that for students who are very distant from the war, who don't have, as I did, grandparents who fought in the war, who sometimes don't even have great grandparents who fought in the war. So you can think through an entire conflict in which you did not fight and say, is this a war about imperialism? Is it a war about territory? Is it about ideologies like anti-Semitism and fascism and communism? And think about whether the story works best that way and experiment. But the trade-off with that is that you lose the people who have the most skin in the game. So the first generation of people who studied the war, they had veterans of the conflict, and they had survivors who had very personal experiences who could add color and nuance to what happened, who added a human face to this suffering and this action. And as those people are no longer with us, or very few of them survive, we can recontextualize the conflict for people who didn't know them. And I think something is definitely gained in that. We can think about a much larger global context, but something is also lost, right? So with each generation, we tell a story like this in a different way. Now I'm telling it to people who don't have a direct connection to it, but I also grew up, I was born at the end of the Cold War, and I knew veterans of this war. I knew Holocaust survivors. My mother's father fought in this conflict in the Pacific War. So I have direct connections. I have people that I associate with this war. And yet now the opportunity, I think, is to uncover archival material, to put it together geographically across continents and across cultures, and to think about what does this really mean in retrospect. That's the opportunity we have now. But it comes at the loss of the people who directly experienced it, who, as I think all of us can well imagine, were very set on how the conflict should be understood and how its primary losses and successes should be understood, because those were losses and successes and gains for them. So my generation of historians has opportunities that previous ones did not, and I hope that reaches a new audience. But yet I also mourn that we can no longer directly talk to the people who can add detail and nuance from the documents in the historical record.
That's so right, themselves. And unfortunately, so many of them, including my grandparents, well, my grandfather would never speak about it at all. My grandmother at least did, and that was such a loss that I feel. I don't think that was uncommon. Let's just talk for a moment. You specialize in the Wehrmacht. For listeners who don't know the term or exactly what that means, why is this still important to study today?
So the Wehrmacht is the central institution of the German armed forces. Technically, the army is the Heer. The Wehrmacht is basically the ground troops and their air support of Nazi Germany. And there's a couple reasons that this is important to study. One, it's a vast institution. By the end of the war, 18 to 18 and a half million men serve in this institution. Most of them German in the sense that they were citizens of Adolf Hitler's Third Reich, but they were also ethnic Germans from around Central Europe and in other places as well. This institution was the central vehicle of Hitler's getting what he wanted during the war. And we might know, or we might associate with the Holocaust institutions like the SS or the Waffen-SS, which is much misunderstood. But in fact, this huge army allowed Hitler to conquer Europe. It allowed him to occupy Europe. It allowed him to control his own people when they were restive. And much more so than other smaller, specialized, more ideological institutions in Nazi Germany, it was the Wehrmacht that conquered Poland. It was the Wehrmacht that intimidated the Czechoslovaks. It was the Wehrmacht that conquered France, much more quickly than had been anticipated by most of Europe. And it was the Wehrmacht that attempted to conquer the Soviet Union. So it is those men who do the work of Hitler's ideological project. And they are, as we sometimes use the term, quite ordinary. Now, some of them are committed Nazi ideologues. Some of them are members of the Nazi party. And all of them, directly or indirectly, profit from the Nazi regime. But many of them had pre-war jobs. They're what Americans might call citizen soldiers. Some of them had very different levels of attachment to the Nazi regime. They were quite young or quite old by the end of the war. So understanding this institution tells us how Hitler went from someone who had this dark vision of a world remade in his image to someone who accomplished parts of that vision. And the other thing to keep in mind, of course, is the easy part of the story as a historian is the Wehrmacht is a military institution. It documents its behavior. It trains men. Mm-hmm. It occupies cities and towns. So we have records on what it is doing. And sometimes those records are incomplete. There are questions we can't answer. But unlike other kinds of historical institutions or historical actors, armies document themselves. And therefore, if we want to understand Nazi Germany and the war it starts and the way that it controls territory and controls people, this might be the best documented institution to do so. It's not the only one, but if you want to understand things like how does Nazi Germany project power, how does it conquer territory, how does it control people, the Wehrmacht is always a huge part of that story.
There have been many documentaries on World War II. I remember as a kid, The World at War, that iconic music, the that sort of one that just stands out as a magnificent series. When I watched episode one of this, it made me think that this is going to be as important, as big as that. Going into it, did you consider what size project this actually was going to be?
Well, I saw pieces of the project. I didn't see the whole project. And I was really, I saw sketches of the whole project, but then I saw the detailed episodes in which I was a part. And I was impressed at the number of people who had been marshaled to do this and the scope of the work, because I kept thinking, well, how do you fit the entire war into a dozen episodes or two dozen episodes or 20 odd episodes? And I think about this because in my own much more modest way, I teach college, university students. And I think, well, I have 25 to 30 lectures to do the entirety of the war. And I explain to the students, I'm going to define the war as the war that Adolf Hitler starts. And I'm not going to talk about the American war in the Asia Pacific, because I have a great colleague who's an East Asianist, and he studies that war. And even that is basically cutting the Second World War in half. And you let so many things go. Right. So I was very impressed with this series and this vision that said, we're not just going to talk about the military conflict, which is an essential thing to keep in mind, and also an essential thing to say about the Wehrmacht. The Wehrmacht is conducting a war, but it's also conducting lots of other things, an occupation, an ideological radicalization of a population, at least one genocide. Right? That's a key perpetrator of the Holocaust. So we can think about a hot war, we can think about a tanks or the operations of different units, but there's also radical revolutions in society happening. There's a social and cultural element of this war, and there is what is happening to the vast civilian populations of the earth. And that isn't simply a detail, because in terms of the destructiveness of the war, we have a kind of a skeleton of combat. And that tells us how different territories become involved in the war. But in fact, to be in uniform, to be a man in uniform, a soldier, sailor, an airman, doesn't represent the primary destructive potential of the war. More civilians die in this war than soldiers. So if we really want to understand it, we can't simply confine ourselves to thinking about operations or campaigns or maneuvers. The civilians aren't simply a supplement to this story. As it turns out in the final reckoning, the war primarily happens to them. So this series, I think, has very much, as historians would say, it's added the social and cultural dimension of the war. But that doesn't simply give this a human flavor. It doesn't simply tell us what's happening on the home fronts. It's the proper corrective, because for all of the complexity and innovation of combat in this war, more people who are not in uniform suffer and die as a result of it than people who are in uniform.
Was there any particular testimony or aspect of this documentary that stayed with you after the filming and after everything had been completed?
I was really impressed with the team that I interacted with and the way they wove stories together. I mean, I came in with my own particular expertise and things I thought they would ask, and sometimes they did. But I was also impressed with the way they put stories together. So as someone who studies Eastern Europe, it's always hard to think about the frame. Do you give a context for the war by explaining the deep nuances of Eastern European history, the history of Polish Jews, the history of Polish nationalism and independence? Or do you talk about a German story of the rise of Nazism? Because one is happening in the other space. And I thought their ability to construct a master narrative that still picked up all of these threads was really impressive. I haven't seen all of the episodes. I know how the war ends, but I don't know how all the episodes come out. But I'm really looking forward to doing, and I'm also looking forward to having the opportunity to talk about this with my family. So my uncle was born in 1942, and I talked about this with him when I first went to filming. His father went and fought in the Second World War in Europe as an American of Polish origin, and thinking about that generationally, what does this look like to someone who had a very different understanding of the
Incredible.
war? I'm hoping that a lot of conversations like that emerge across the world of people thinking about, okay, what does this look like to you? What does this look like to a teenager now? What does this look like to a person in their 80s, in their 90s, who had a much more direct relationship to the war?
I'm fascinated how storytelling does change. If you look at your students, the way in which you convey history, has that changed over the years in line or in step with how we tell stories?
It has even since I began teaching 10 or so years ago. I'm thinking now to specific examples of this. Teaching is never neutral. It's never sort of a prepackaged. It's an art and not a science, perhaps the best way to do that. And what you teach is about who you're teaching and also about who you are. So I think now, if I'm teaching students who are 18, 19, 20 years old, I always have to think generationally that my students in the US were born after 9/11, whereas
Oh, that's so
that
interesting.
event, yes, that event
That's
happened when
just too
I was a,
much. It's
yes,
just too much. I'm
just
sorry.
ponder that. I was a freshman in college when that happened. So I was very much aware of things, but not a particularly significant actor in the world. So teaching people is about thinking about the events that frame their existence and the extreme events. What is the worst thing that's happened to them? What is the best thing that's happened to them? And the Second World War, increasingly, I think, for young people, is a vague and extremely important and sort of striking chiaroscuro event in the past that is totally disconnected from their experiences, but very big and very bad and very interesting. And I think one of, therefore, my goals as a teacher is to make points of contact with the students
Connect to
through their
something that they
families,
can.
yes, but also, yeah, through legacies that they understand, institutions built during the war and afterwards. And also, and the harder thing that is set up as a challenge is the Second World War destroys a lot of things that the people who fight it and participate in it value and have helped build. And trying to get across to young people that the world they live in is a result of the creation and destruction of the Second World War is a hard thing to do. And sometimes it's easier to do with physical objects. This building was built, this border was recreated during the war. And I think that's an easier level of purchase. But this ideology was created in the wake of the war, or this conception of a rules-based order comes out of the chaos of the Second World War. That's another level of thinking that is sometimes harder to build. It depends on how much time you have within a class. If you have, as in many, many, if you have an hour to talk about the Second World War, you won't do it. If you have a semester, there might be more opportunities to sort of put those pieces together.
Absolutely. I am aware of time. We do need to unfortunately wrap it up because I could talk about this all day. But just finally, after spending so much of your life immersed in history, what do you hope most that audiences will take away from this documentary series?
It depends on who the audience is, but I want people to watch it to think, especially young people who've read about this in books, who don't know the people who fought the war, who suffered the war, who survived the war, that this is not a chapter that is closed. This is not a thing that is completely over, that has no legacy into the present. And the people who fought and experienced this and who made the great and small decisions of the war were people like us. They were people with hopes and dreams. They were people with families. They were people who were committed to things and who were young and had their whole lives ahead of them. And as someone who studies some of the things I do, the atrocities and the genocides within the war, it's very easy to focus on numerical things like statistics and body counts. But I think the most important thing to realize is in a war this revolutionary and catastrophic, that the people who suffered and died in it really lived before they died, that they were individuals, and that their choices and decisions mattered, even if those can often get lost in the complex shuffle of a global conflict.
That is unfortunately where we do have to leave it. Jadwiga Biskup, no, I'm going to say this properly, Biskupcha. I don't know if that was anything proper. I'm really, really terrible and I really apologize.
Biskupska, yes.
Oh, there we go, Biskupska. I should have just had you introduce yourself. I apologize for that. But what a fantastic discussion, and certainly you do a lot of justice to this incredible, incredible series. That is where we leave it after this. I will give you all of the information about where you can watch the series and what channel it will be on. And as I said before, don't miss it.